talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, a concern that I have with Nick Caserio. Why did he come to Houston? He wanted to come to Houston to get out of the Bill Belichick shadow, right?
Indeed.
So probably wants some power. Wants to have organizational control, which I get. It's like it's just the evolution of the position, right? You're an assistant general manager for a long time. You're the right-hand man for a long time. You want your crack. You want your crack at running an organization, controlling the 53, seeing what you can do with it. So that's okay. But then how about the part where he hires David Culley, who wasn't exactly, you know, the strongest candidate for the job? Maybe somebody that he can control a little bit, right? Like, yeah. We've called David Culley the puppet for Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio is the brains behind the operation. He's the guy in charge of the organization. He's on the headset, for goodness sakes, on game day. How many general managers are on the headset?
Time out. That's fact?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, that's fact. Yeah, Culley was asked about that during, and this is something that I already knew, but just like the latest example of this, the latest proof of this, David Culley was asked during his press conference on Monday, or it might have been Sunday, one of the two, if this was, we know that Nick Caserio was on the headset, was the benching of Tyrod Taylor a Nick Caserio decision? David Culley said, no, it was not, but didn't, you know, there was no issue that.
I heard the innuendo and the rumors. I didn't know that was
the
verified.
He's in the coach's booth during the game, and he's on headset.
Wow.
Absolutely. So you have a guy who, again, came to Houston for the power to have organizational control. He hires David Culley, who nobody saw as being the head coach of any NFL
or
team
coordinator
ever, or a coordinator or a play caller. And you start to kind of put these things in line here. Why hire David Culley? Because he's the guy that wants to make every decision, right? Like, if you were to go out and hire, like, some guy that's been around the NFL for a long time that might push back against you, you probably wouldn't love that if you're a GM that's craving all of this control. So the fear that I have with Nick Caserio is kind of like Jerry Jones a little bit, is that it worries me that he's going to have trouble hiring a coach that wants more control. Which you probably need to have a coach that's going to push back at the GM and want some more control. Like, I'm a little worried that Nick Caserio is going to be the Jerry Jones and the David Culley's the Dave Campo of the Houston Texans.
Or, like, I was going to say the exact same example, but say when Parcells got there and the famous line had to come out of it, which was because of the fact that he butted heads with management and Jerry Jones and said, if you want me to serve the dinner, at least let me help pick out the groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the similar situation. And you're right. But then you ask the question, why did the Texans hire Nick Caserio? Better question would be, why did Nick Caserio want to go to the Texans? Well, because Bill O'Brien already set the precedent that set him up to do exactly what he wanted to do. The only way he knew how to do things was my way or the highway, Bill Belichick. So the only way he was going to get a similar role without having the same kind of experience that every team would want so that they would turn everything over to you, especially with your first time getting that job, would be to have an ownership group that had already experienced and been naive enough to continue to do what they did for Bill O'Brien and do it again for you so that you could take the blueprint you had with Belichick and try and execute it yourself. Therefore, you took the Houston Texans.
Dick Willie saying you don't want a good coach this year because the team is going to rebuild. You want the new coach in 3-5, which is something we've said as well.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, Dick Willie, you're right, and I agree with that. And look, this is just a concern that I have going forward. Like, it worries me that this could be a potential problem going forward for Nick Caserio, is that you have a general manager that basically wants to make every decision in this organization, which is a little bit similar to Jack Easterby, right? Like, Jack Easterby talks a really good game. He favored Curry with Cal McNair so much that he was the laughingstock of the NFL, so much that, you know, Cal, you can make a case, picked Jack Easterby over Deshaun Watson, or at least whenever the franchise was at an all-time low and his chance to at least get some positive PR was to get rid of Jack Easterby. Nick Caserio, every time he talks, blown away. He's a smart football mind.
See, I'm not with you on that.
It could
I don't
be a sales
him.
Job. Yeah, it could be a sales job.
Yeah, he's a used car salesman to me.
It could be.
There's not an ounce of me that trusts Nick Caserio. But it does make sense when you start looking at it that and even add that element too that he's on the headset in the coach's box on game days. He's a control freak, and he's trying to maximize for his own benefit and hopefully for the benefit of the team he works for, in his mind, doing the only way he knows how to do it. He doesn't know how to do it where it's a 50-50 situation or the coach actually has as much or more power than the general manager, like Mike Tomlin, like some of the successful coaches we've seen in this league, and John Harbaugh and others, when they work in unison with an Ozzie Newsome or guys like that. The only way he knows how to do business is the Bill Belichick way, which is total control.
Yeah, and I mean, that worries me because I believe that you need to have a good NFL head coach to be a good NFL organization. And yes, Dick Willey, you're right. Something that we brought up many times. I don't think David Culley's getting fired this offseason because you're not looking to bring in a new coach yet because the roster is depleted. You right. want to bring in that new coach somewhere between year three, year five of this current rebuild. But I'm concerned Nick Caserio is not going to be able to do that because of the control that he wants to have within this organization. And if you want to go back from the start of Nick Caserio, there's some things that I've liked. There's one thing that I've liked that he's done, and there's a lot of other things that I haven't liked. So whenever I say he speaks a good game, that doesn't mean I'm like all in. It doesn't mean that I'm on board. In fact, it scares me because I'm an actions over words kind of guy. And if you want to look, the words are great from Caserio. He sounds very smart. Let's look at the actions. We talk about this a lot. The trades that he's made, for the most part, have made absolutely no sense. He's traded late draft picks for veterans who are not even on this team anymore. And there's more than one occasion of him doing that. The one thing that I am somewhat encouraged about was that I liked the draft that he had last season. I think finding Roy Lopez late in the sixth round was a solid pick. I think Brevin Jordan has shown flashes. I think Nico Collins has shown flashes. I think that there's some promise when you look at Nick Caserio's draft. But all the trades, I'm not sure he's won one single one, and he's made a lot of them. And this is another concern that I have going forward with Nick Caserio. We're evaluating who he is as a general manager. The fact that he's so hungry for the power. The fact that he hired David Culley, who's not a strong-willed head coach. I'm worried Nick Caserio is never going to hire that guy.
Well, I mean, you realistically, with the picture that you paint, could be setting the fan base up for Bill O'Brien 2.0. Because you can have all the control. You can have all the things that you want. But on the flip side, you're only normally given those because you give the fans what they want and ownership what they want, which is a team that competes and wins and does a lot of positive things, which warrants and also kind of says it's a trade-off. That scares the hell out of any Texans fan, and if it doesn't, it should, because of the fact that that didn't end well with Bill O'Brien. And because, when we're talking about puppeteers, Jim Henson, we're not just talking about the fact that he hired Culley because Culley's a puppet for him. He's working for a puppet that he can control too in Cal McNair, just like Bill O'Brien did. So the fact that he comes in and he's Geppetto and they're all Pinocchios and he can just lie until their nose grows and there's no ramification on him, why wouldn't you want and take this job? Why wouldn't you, no matter what Jack Easterby is or isn't, why wouldn't you just step in? And at a certain point, it may be the toughest decision Cal McNair ever has to make. You let DeAndre Hopkins go. And we don't even know if you had to say so. But if he comes to you and says his next move is, I need Jack Easterby to go, would that be the toughest decision that Cal ever had to make? Because his buddy, his boo, he wouldn't want to see go bye-bye.
See, I don't feel like that's even a logical question. Because I honestly cannot even believe that to happen.
You think Cal's so adamant that Jack has to stay?
I think Nick and Jack are such good friends.
I don't think they're as tight as you think they are.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think because of what we're just done talking about. Here's why. What we were just talking about is total control and dictatorship, right?
See, I think they can work in unison.
I think that he sees what we see, though, and says, I can't have total control if the meddler is in the locker room every day, is pulling me in to be a part of the game ball presentation, is telling me where I need to go, where I'm telling everybody else where I'm going to go.
That's true. I mean, you go back to week one, whenever the Texans beat the Jags, you had everybody giving the game ball to David Culley, and everybody's excited and pumped up for basically the Ted Lasso of the NFL, getting his first victory as an NFL head coach, long time coming. And then you can see in the side, you had Easterby trying to shove Nick Caserio to the front of the class so he could get his pat on the back as well, which kind of shows you what Jack Easterby is. I go back to what Nick Caserio said in his introductory press conference, which was a long time ago. But he just talked about the relationship with Jack Easterby. And that's the time where you don't even want to associate yourself with Jack Easterby, right? Because Nick Caserio came into town. He knew the negative PR that Jack Easterby had. So, like, if there was ever a time to kind of distance yourself a little bit from Easterby, that was it. Yet you had Caserio going to bat for Easterby. And maybe it was because he got on the job. I mean, that could have been
it. That's why I said there's a grace period. I can see it being a one-year deal, but at a certain point, something Jack Easterby does is going to rub Nick the wrong way. And it may be the happy medium of a discussion with Cal. Look, he can be the team chaplain. He can hand out note cards. But he can't be in my locker room, on my sidelines, and at my practices every single day meddling when I'm trying, especially when the team gets better. That's when it's going to be a bigger distraction than it could be whatever benefit they think they're getting in the culture side.
And a little worried, too, about when the roster is better, do you have the coach in place that can get the most out of them, or do you have a coach in place that Nick Caserio can control? Another person in Houston that rubs people the wrong way is Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
He was, of course, has been in the news recently because he had $600,000 found in his wall when a plumber came in there, which a plumber got paid, by the way. He got a reward of $20,000,
Let's talk about that at a certain point, too. The first fact, he did get paid, but the fact that he lobbied for it, and basically,
he lobbied for the reward.
Oh yeah. So here's what happened. So Crime Stoppers initially, when the crime was reported,
I don't like that,
had a $25,000 reward. Did you know this?
I didn't know.
Okay, so they had a $25,000 reward. They said the statute of limitations meant he wasn't entitled to that reward. The media found him, and the next day he comes out and goes, "I mean, I think somehow, some way, they should pay me for this. I think that without me, they wouldn't have known where it was. And whether I solved the crime completely or I had a major thing to do with it, I think someone should pay me." And I'm like, see, that's the awful look you didn't need to do, and someone could have done it for you. The fact you did it for yourself, I'm not rooting for you as hard
Money's
now.
Money's money, guys. Are you kidding me?
No, you can't play like
25,
that.
He got $25,000?
I didn't say. That was the initial when Crime Stoppers, when the crime happened in 14 or whenever it was. The fact that we're now in 2021, they said statute of limitations, he doesn't get that.
Shoot, I dedicate my life to getting that $25,000 publicly.
What did he get? Do we know?
I think he got 20.
Where did it come from? Did it come from the church or did it come from?
I promise you it's not the church.
I don't think Joel's kicking that back out.
I don't know where it came from, but I saw that he did get rewarded $20,000. Anyways, there was a dude the other day that deked Joel Osteen. I guess he ran across him out just on the streets, out in public. And I guess he told him, hey, let's take a picture together. And instead, he pulled this.
You with Joel Osteen? Hey, man, you know you're a piece of right? You know, right? Right? Come on, yeah, you know. You know, right? Yeah, you know.
So he pulled in Joel Osteen, trying to take a selfie with him, and then all of a sudden he told him he was a piece of crap. I didn't like the move. Look, I understand that Joel Osteen's not the most popular figure in the world, but, like, I'm probably not well liked by some people. You're probably not well liked by some people. If somebody was hey, let's take a selfie together, and then they pulled that number on you, I feel like that was Bush League. I really do.
Jeremy, here's the thing. Whoever the guy was did it with a purpose and one sole purpose in mind, and that was I'm getting my 15 seconds of fame. I'm getting my TikTok. I'm getting my social media push where everybody's going to be, look at me, look at me, look at me. But again, it shows you the unbelievable confidence that social media has given everyone, just like cell phones, right? Where, you know, you can be the cowardly keyboard warrior that sends your texts and your Twitches and your tweets and does all those things. But it also gives you that overwhelming confidence to say, he's not going to have any kind of a, he's not going to hit me. He's Joel Osteen. He's a man of God. So I'm going to be able to get away with this, and then I'm going to get 3 million followers or how many likes and retweets and all the other things out of this, and I'm going to be the hero that everybody he thinks wants. That's why he did it,
and
he got away with it. I'd be careful who you do it with, because if it wasn't Joel Osteen, and if he did that to an NFL player or someone like that, someone's going to bust him in the mouth.
I thought it was pretty I thought Osteen actually handled it pretty well. He laughed at him and was like, ha, 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 ha. But, yeah, I thought it was Bush League doing that to Osteen, even if you don't like him. The way you brought him in like that I didn't think was very, very cool. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So the lockout's going on in Major League Baseball, yet there's still tons of reports about who likes who, who's going where. And the Astros are reportedly in on a shortstop. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get into the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving, sponsored by Circle Saw. On the second day, we'd like to give back to Habitat for Humanity, who brings the Houston area together to build homes, communities, and hope. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to head to ESPN975.com/12days to give what you can. Plus, David Gao, CEO of Gao Media, has generously agreed to match donations to each charity up to $500. So head to ESPN975.com/12days to make your donation to Habitat for Humanity now. No donation will go unnoticed. We have an event up here on the over here at the radio station a little bit later,
yeah.
which is a business casual thing.
Yes.
I'm not going to be able to make it, get some plans to make a little bit later. But Cody will be here doing a show during the event, so he's wearing business casual attire.
So will Jake.
Jake will be here, as will Brad Kellner, as will Andrew Carlson. I don't know why they wouldn't be. But Cody put this on Twitter a moment ago. He said, do jeans qualify as appropriate for business casual? What do you think?
So my answer would be, in my years of experience with this, is that things have changed. I think when business casual was first introduced as a regular dress code in the office, it was anything but jeans. But I think that as we went more casual as a society, and then especially coming out of the pandemic, I think that as long as those jeans don't have rips and all the different things that are fashionable these days, there's such a thing as a nice pair of jeans. If you have a nice pair of jeans and then the appropriate shirt, and it doesn't have to be tucked in anymore. But normally, if I would say, if you're going to go jeans on a business casual, you've got an Oxford shirt that's tucked in with a belt and appropriate shoes, and you're fine.
Probably need a jacket with jeans, though, I think.
I don't think unless a jacket's required for the event, I wouldn't even go that far.
But I feel like you have to class up the jean. Because I agree with everything that you said.
The tucked-in Oxford shirt classes it up enough.
Maybe. I guess I'd have to see the look. But I agree with you that jeans can be appropriate for business casual. But the rest of you, and again, they have to be good jeans. And they have to be stylish jeans, too. Like, they can't be these
yes.
big baggy jeans that, like, I
right.
wear around the house. They got to be stylish jeans that are in style. And you also have to have really good clothes around. You got to have good shoes.
No doubt.
Good belt, good shirt.
Even the sock game right now
sock
is important.
Sock game has to be good.
Yep.
Or just match, and then I say a coat too. I wear jeans on the charters out of town, which is
yeah.
business casual, but I wear
yeah.
a coat.
See, when we got to the later stages of business casual, you could get away with what you're talking about. We call them dress jeans, right? But
yeah.
they're just the cleaner version of jeans. And as long, like you said, as long as everything else when you accessorize, I'm talking about a starched dress shirt, right? Mm-hmm. Long sleeve dress shirt that's tucked in.
Button up. Yeah.
yeah, button up dress shirt that's tucked in with the appropriate belt matches the shoes. Not enough guys value how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
Belt matches the shoes. You can get away with it these days without a coat. Now, there's certain things that you go to or certain things that say jacket optional or jacket required. But if it's a business casual, a lot of times, I don't think you have to go as far as a jacket, but you're right. In order to make sure there's not going to be anyone that doubts whether that's business casual or not, if you finish it with a sport coat, you can make it work.
I like to err on the side of, like, overdressed, too. Like, you want to be overdressed, not underdressed. Like, that's very important. And it also begs the question, like, how often do you wash your jeans?
Yeah, I was going to paying homage to my good friend Barry Laminack, who we've gotten deep discussions on this in the past. The washing of the jeans thing, he believed was once a year.
What? Once a year?
Yes.
That sounds dirty, especially
and,
like in
and
the
see,
pandemic
and we
era.
Always, I felt that way, too. I could see, like, once a month, because in a lot of ways, and you kind of questioned this when we were talking about this before the show, but the thing is, the fit means something. And when you get them out of the dryer or the first time you wear them after you wash them, there's a grace period where the boys got to have some freedom again and things got to get stretched out a little bit so that your jeans fit you the right way. Once you get to that point, unless you get something on them or you're like at a cigar bar where there's a stench that
yeah,
goes with
smoke.
It.
Smoke.
You basically keep those jeans in good condition and don't have to wash them for like a month. But a year was always excessive to me.
Man, I go like every two or three wears, I'm washing the jeans. I feel like once you don't like wash them and dry them, I feel like they start to sag a little bit. Like, I feel like the dryness, like in the heat, like brings them back
well,
to proper
of the
fit.
Give, that, I can see that, but it can also bring back too far, depending on if it's the holidays or what. If you
good
haven't
point.
Started the beautification yeah. of Branham
there's,
yet.
There's a pair of jeans I'm currently not wearing that are not in circulation at the moment because the beautification of Branham doesn't begin until January
3rd. My boy Barry also dabbled in skinny jeans. That's where you really run into where I can understand. If you're going the skinny jean route as a confident man, that I can see not washing them all the time because it can skinny some other things if you continue to wash them.
Guys, everybody knows that if you want a straight answer, you go to Google and you take the very first link.
Sure, right.
So I Googled, how often should you wash jeans? And the first article that comes up says the answer ranges everywhere from once to every 10 wears.
My goodness.
To never.
Never?
To never. It says more serious blue jean wearers tell you never wash them.
What if he gets something on them?
Absolutely.
I have to imagine that's an exception to the rule, but I don't know. It doesn't say that.
Never. Like, that's like Kim Kardashian, like the elitist, right? Like, they only wear one clothes. Like, oh, they only wear things once anyways for, like, their whole life.
Here's another variable. Now that ripped jeans are coming back again, yet again, with the rips and the holes that are a fact, right? You get that rip or that hole to look a certain way where it looks somewhat worn and frayed. It doesn't look like you just cut it with the scissors to be hip and cool. Once you get it to that point, if you wash them again, you can run the risk of screwing up that rip job because some of that white frayed underside that comes out and stuff like that, it could disappear. It could get torn.
Especially the dryer.
Yeah, and then you're running into a different situation with a problem. So that factors in as well. But yeah, a year is not enough, but I think after every wearing is way too much.
I'm always worried about the stink. Do you think Lance McCullers Jr. wears skinny jeans?
Well, do you wear underwear?
Do I wear underwear? Yes, I wear underwear.
Then why are you worried about the stink?
What?
You said you're always worried about the stink.
Oh,
if you're
jeans,
at a cigar
yeah.
bar, that's one thing.
Well, even if you go outside, you have like a level of BO.
Look,
like, that's just common.
In your palate area, in the low-hanging fruit area, there's a stink.
Anywhere on the jeans. The jeans go from the waist all the way down to the ankle. There's a lot
no
of coverage
stink?
There.
I think what you're doing is a big part of it. Right? If you're like out and about all day, every day in jeans, you need to do it more often. I usually wear jeans to work, and then I switch into either sweatpants or, if I'm being honest, sometimes pajamas at home. I'm wearing jeans for like 5 hours a day.
That's true. I wear shorts.
While I'm sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah. As soon as I get home, I'm changing into my comfy clothes, which is shorts and a t-shirt. There's no doubt about that.
I work in that.
Yeah. We didn't get into radio for the dress code,
right? That's right.
Dusty Baker, the Baseball America Manager of the Year. Meanwhile, though, the Astros could be on the verge of losing their best coach. Joe Espada apparently interviewing for the Mets head coaching vacancy. This would be a disaster, in my opinion. You're already losing Brent Strom, who's like the mastermind behind your quality pitching. And then if you lose Joe Espada, you're basically losing the mastermind of who's managing the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. And like I said to you when we started talking about the offseason for the Astros and losing to Brent Strom, the one guy you could ill afford to lose is Joe Espada, so I was hopeful that someone, James Click and otherwise, including possibly Jim Crane, had a conversation or two with Joe Espada that said, look, your manager in waiting, please understand we want you to be the long-term manager of this franchise. We just owe it to Dusty and with this group that loves him at least one more go-round. So we want to make it worth your while, even if you do what Venable had at Clemson and say we're going to make you the highest paid assistant or coach in baseball in the short term so that we can hire you as our manager when the time is right just to keep him. I hope those conversations either have been had before or because of this, it's a wake-up call that someone says, whoa, let's get Joe on the phone right now because you can't afford to lose Joe Espada and Brent Strom in the same offseason.
Joe Espada, though, if he gets offered the job, is taking it. So I'm hoping he does not get offered the job. One of the five finalists. Lance McCullers was a hometown captain for the Texans on Sunday. Gave an update about his elbow. Lance McCullers said that he had another MRI and it looked good. Feels like the arm injury is almost completely healed. Should be good to go if spring training gets underway on time. Good news for the Texans home field captain. This is a tweet from Greg Bailey. Is that good news? The fact that it's still kind of lingering around, it's not quite 100% yet. Looks like he'll be back for spring training, but is this lingering around a little bit too much for your comfort?
Scares me. It's similar, maybe a little different fear than what we have for Nick Caserio in the future. For Lance McCullers, it wasn't just like a so-so draft with not everything to deal with. This was, you're coming off Tommy John surgery, mm-hmm. and we're dealing with another issue with the arm. As much as people would have reservations about Urquidy if nothing gets done and changes and no medical attention was given to his shoulder in the offseason, it's natural for you going into the season going, is this shoulder going to act up again? But when you've had Tommy John surgery and then you have forearm issues, and if you go back to when we got into the controversy of if Verlander needed Tommy John or not, it started with forearm stiffness, tightness. That's what I worry about. And the fact that it's taken so long, and even in the charity softball games, he had to play first base. They didn't want him throwing. I get it. You handle him with kid gloves, but it doesn't give me any confidence that he's going to be 100% all next season.
I think you're always worried about Lance McCullers with his injury history and the fact that he missed all of the postseason. To me, it's good signs that he's out and about. Like, the fact that he's there at NRG is a good sign. The fact that he's at softball with Travis Scott playing first base is a good sign. But it always worries you in the back of the mind whenever it comes to Lance McCullers and the history he's had with arm trouble. We'll step away for a moment when we come back. Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter. He'll join us when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Turn down for what?
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HR&P guest line, NFL Hall of Fame voter. Howard, watching that game yesterday, knowing you for as long as I've known you now, that just struck me as your kind of game. Am I right?
I do like a little old school now and then. You know, I'm one of those guys, you know, everybody, baseball fans complain about boring 1-0 pitcher's duels. I say, you kidding me? You're on your edge of your seat the entire game where one pitch can make the difference. So, yeah, I kind of – sure, you'd like to have more scoring and more fun and all that, but once in a while, a game like that where it's just grimy and grinding and all that, bad conditions. The only thing that was missing really was real, you know, like accumulating snow on the ground.
Yeah.
That would have made it even better. But yeah, I mean, those can be fun games to watch, even though they're not tremendously exciting. But you also know that at any moment, a crazy play or whatever it might be can change the entire game around.
Well, and Howard, it's interesting because it's a tale of two conferences, the real strength in the NFC, but the parity a lot across the AFC. But it makes you believe after last night's game that home field could make a big difference too, especially when you get the teams in the North or the teams on the East Coast. New England and Green Bay come to mind, and how important that might be. You're sitting there right there with the best in the city of the best record and covering the team with the best record in all of football in the Cardinals. How important to the Cardinals and to other teams is that home field going to be when we start trying to get some kind of sense made out of all this muddled up playoff picture in both conferences?
Well, definitely. It definitely can be a big difference, even though we can all point to Tampa Bay going into Green Bay and winning in the NFC Championship game last year. So you never know. Sometimes you can get a mid to late January game and the weather isn't brutal. It's just cold, but you're kind of expecting that. And really the cold, I don't know if it's as much of an issue unless it's – I mean, I always think back to that Packers-Giants playoff game, which that wasn't cold. That was Siberian
Howard,
cold.
I love you. I say this on a weekly basis, and you get two shots to the groin on me in 3 minutes, the Giants game and the Buccaneers game. My Packer fandemonium is taking a huge hit here.
It is, but it was just wild to see the camera would go on Tom Coughlin on the sideline, and his face was a beet red, and you could see, like, you know, whatever was coming out of his nose almost frozen on his lips. It was pretty crazy. So, but, you know, it's not always horrible weather. But, yeah, if you're a team, especially from a warm weather climate, you'd much rather play in better conditions. But I'll tell you, probably the players in Green Bay or those cities, they probably like to play in better conditions too, given all the supposed advantage.
It's minus one in Green Bay today, so you're probably right in terms of if they want to be comfortable, but they also know it's an advantage if you make a warm weather team come to them.
Yeah, it definitely can be. It definitely can be. And it was interesting because you talk about those type of games, and the Cardinals went into Chicago on Sunday in cold and wind and rain, and granted, the Bears aren't a great team, but they handled them. And that's the thing about the postseason. As much as, yeah, you'd love to have that home field advantage, the reality is the best teams are playing each other. And when that happens, usually it's close, not always, but usually they're close games, and we see what ends up deciding it. And last night was a perfect example. I mean, the Patriots came out on top, but it was still obviously a very close game all the way, and easily any one play could turn it the other direction.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HR&P guest line. Howard, I guess Cliff isn't going to Oklahoma after all, huh?
I guess not. Talk about an overblown story, which really never really got any legs. I mean, it basically had legs for one day, if that, when it was reported, obviously, that Oklahoma is targeting Cliff Kingsbury for that job. And yet, when you would read all the reports, and I realize reports sometimes you never know how true they are, but all the reports and all the stories that came out all week from Oklahoma and mentioning the different possibilities, none of them ever mentioned Cliff Kingsbury. The only time Cliff Kingsbury was ever mentioned was in that tweet by Adam Schefter on Sunday that Oklahoma was targeting him. So we know where that came from. It came from his agent, and he thought, oh, let's put it out there that Cliff might leave because he's going into the last year of his contract next year, although the team has a team option for the fifth year. But yeah, that one ended pretty quickly, and I don't think there was never anything serious that he would actually consider that.
Howard, Carolina fired their OC, Joe Brady, earlier this week, or over the weekend, actually, during the bye, which, I mean, no Christian McCaffrey, quarterback right. Hurt. They bring in Cam Newton. What do you think's going on there in Carolina?
It always seems to me that when coaches make moves like this, that they're feeling the heat themselves. And so they make a move, I always think they're scapegoat moves, and I'm not saying they're not. Are there times when they're warranted? Perhaps. But when you have a guy who's run the offense, and they were pretty good on offense, as you mentioned, especially when Christian McCaffrey was healthy, and then he had a stretch where he wasn't, he came back. They played really good football against the Cardinals in a win, and then McCaffrey gets hurt again. And all of a sudden, it's the offensive coordinator's fault. Oh, we have to score more points. Or, just like Jason Garrett with the Giants. Oh, we have to score more points. Yeah, well, the Giants have really rolled up the points after firing Jason Garrett, haven't they? I mean, most of the time, when you have situations like that, it comes down to talent. It comes down to the players. But the head coach makes a decision to take some heat off himself. And we'll see if this perhaps means that there could be some future heat coming on Matt Rhule there. Because we know that owner, David Tepper, he's not a very patient guy. I mean, we've seen that. And, we'll see what happens with that team. But, most owners don't look at things logically and don't want to get involved in the what people call excuses, just explanations and reality of why teams win and teams lose in a league that's very difficult just to win a game.
It's interesting, Howard, because you bring up Rhule, and then his name was being circulated amongst college jobs as if maybe he was looking for his own insurance policy. And then we look at the job that we're talking about in terms of with guys on the hot seat. Joe Judge of the Giants is probably on the hot seat, and he could be in jeopardy. But Mike Zimmer might have put himself at the head of the class, losing to the Lions the way that he did after a pretty good run with Minnesota. The way that they didn't defend that last play and him being a defensive mind, could Mike Zimmer be at the top of the chart of hot seats?
He could be, and you never know what owners are thinking, and that's the reality there. I think the Wolves, they like Zimmer. They like the job he's done, but they have struggled, and especially the last 2 years, it's been mostly on defense, which is what he does best, supposedly. They've had injuries too, but I know all teams have them, but they just haven't come up with big plays when they're needed. And so they just that Vikings team, they just seem to have a way of losing games in very weird fashion. Then they'll bounce back and win one or two. Okay, they're back on track. And then something weird happens again. I mean, heck, I go back to week two when they came into Arizona and played a great football game and had the Cardinals beat. Then they fell behind, but then they had a 37-yard field goal to win the game as time expired, and Greg Joseph, the kicker, missed it. And all of a sudden you're going there, well, what can I do? I mean, what can the coach do if a player blows a coverage or someone on the other team just makes a great play? We all like to blame the coach, but mostly it comes down to players, but the coach is the one that takes the heat most of the time, and who knows? This could be the end for Zimmer there. But then they'll be challenged, though, because I always say this, guys. I always say this. The easiest thing in the world to do in terms of saying, okay, it's time to make a change. All the rabid people are out. Oh, you got to make a change. So it's easy to call the coach in and say, hey, we're going in another direction. But then the challenge is finding another coach who's just as good, much less better. And you also know that all the system's going to change, new offense, new defense. Then there's going to be more adjustment period. And as we've seen many, many times, changing the coach doesn't necessarily change the fortunes of a football team.
And he's okay, Howard. He's got like a Playboy Instagram model girlfriend now, too. Mike Zimmer will be fine.
He'll be fine.
Howard, Howard, who gives Philadelphia the best chance to win a quarterback, Gardner Minshew or Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, that's a great question. And they've both played well in these last several weeks, and Hurts certainly got them back into position to say, hey, we have a chance at the playoffs. And then Minshew goes out there and plays lights out. I think they both could give that team a pretty good chance. Obviously, you like the other things that Hurts can do with his legs and all those things. But I'll tell you now, he struggles, if something happens, then they know now what they have in Gardner Minshew, who, by the way, played pretty good football in Jacksonville for a bad football team for the most part. He played pretty good football, and players and teammates rave about him as a leader and his personality and just his football character, if you will. You just wonder if a game like that, I know it's only one game, but if a game like that and showing what he did there, if it says to a team, hey, you know what? We don't have to spend $25 million. We don't have to trade 16,000 draft choices for a guy. We don't have to draft someone second or third overall that you never know how they're going to be in the NFL. Here's a guy that maybe you can win games with. You wonder if some team will give him a shot, because I deep down, I really believe he deserves one. Well, like Taylor Heinicke. I mean, there's another example. I mean, here's a guy. Guys, I was in St. Louis for the abbreviated XFL season. And Taylor Heinicke was the backup for the St. Louis Battlehawks.
Wow.
He wasn't even the starter there.
That's
and now
crazy.
Look what he's doing with Washington.
Yeah, and he deserves more opportunities to be a starter, I think.
Totally.
Now, before we let you go, Howard, we got to ask you, because Sage Rosenfeld, the journeyman quarterback that was a one-time backup quarterback here in Houston, does a weekly spot on our station. And he said, watching this Texans offense, it may be one of the worst offenses in NFL history. Maybe we haven't given them enough attention in terms of how bad the offense has been, but how do you see that, and how do you see the Texans offensively?
Yeah, it's a good point. And when a quarterback says that, obviously there's a little hyperbole there, most likely, but because you could probably, if you really thought hard, you could come up with some pretty awful offenses. But when a quarterback says that, they obviously look at the game differently than most of all of us, and they see what they're doing. Of course, a certain amount of what teams do on offense is obviously based on the players that they have. And there's not much of a running game. The support around the quarterback isn't particularly good. And when you have a lot of change here, there, and everywhere, it's hard to have some consistency. So I don't know what the future, what it means there for the future. Certainly they have to look long and hard and say, who is going to be our next quarterback, or if there is going to be a next one, but who's going to be the guy that you would hope to be for the long haul? And it's tough to evaluate when you're just not that talented a team with the players around that quarterback.
Howard, always enjoy talking ball. Look forward to our conversation next week.
Look forward to it, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
always
Howard.
Enjoy it.
Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, joining us on the HR&P guest line. When we come back, should the Texans offense be as historically bad as they are, like Sage Rosenfeld says, and often we'll ask the Wheelhouseman how often they wash their jeans. That's next.
Spiffy.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Cars for Kids. Holidays are coming up. You want a little extra cash in your pocket? How about a $50 Visa gift card? All you got to do is make the donation to Houston Cars for Kids. Go to carsforkids.org. If you've got a vehicle collecting rust or dust, it might be a motorcycle, it might be a truck, it might be a trailer, an SUV. It doesn't matter if it's running or not. It doesn't matter if it's an eyesore or not. They'll take it off your hands, and they'll reward you instead of you having to pay a tow truck driver to get rid of your junk. It's as simple as going to carsforkids.org or calling 713-225-4226. Mention ESPN 97.5 when you do. You get that $50 Visa gift card. Then tell them where you live. Tell them what you got. They come to you and do what they do. They tow it away for free. You get a tax write-off as well, and then the process really begins. Your donation becomes resources for kids in the Houston area trying to get a second chance to get their degree. It's all kept local at the Houston Can Academies, and it benefits these kids on a daily basis. Some of these kids, in order to focus on the books, are also focused on how do I get enough money to get food in my system or get bus fare or pay for books. You don't have to worry about all that if you're one of these kids in the program. As long as you guys make donations, that's what your resources do. And they do it on a daily basis. So as we get close to the holidays and a season of giving, even if it only means something to you because you're getting a free tow job and getting rid of some trash on your property, do the right thing because of the fact that you are making a donation that's going to make a difference in kids' lives in Houston. So at the end of the day, either call them, 225-4226, 713-225-4226, or carsforkids.org. Right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Cody Stutes of the Will House joining us now. Cody, you had that tweet earlier because you're getting ready for the event a little bit later tonight. A little mixer out in the lobby. You asked if jeans could be considered business casual. I'm of the side that you can be. Joel said the same thing. It looks like your Twitter poll says that you can be as well. Where do you stand on the side of the argument?
I just don't see jeans really as business casual. But maybe if you jazz up what you're wearing, like as far as a shirt or a, you know, like maybe you're throwing a sport coat with it, something like that, I guess I could see it. But I just, jeans doesn't qualify as business casual for me.
We had a spirited debate on how often you wash your jeans. Yeah. Like, what's the range? Like, what is your number there?
Like,
how many wears before you wash
five?
Them? Five, man.
See, that's why I said I would average about once a month-ish. Barry Laminack once a year.
I'm in the minority,
a skinny
here, though.
Jean guy. So again, when fit makes a difference, right? Like, if you wash and dry them, you know that that first couple hours of wearing them is an adjustment period.
Sure, yeah.
And if they're skinny, then it's a big adjustment period,
sure,
depending
yeah.
on what you got going.
Also, what you do in them, too. Like, I mean, you if you're the type of person that hits the jeans, like, in the middle of summer for a couple of days, like, all right, it's a little gross that you're rocking them four or five days in a row. But, like, coolish weather, like, five, six wears before you wash them.
I go one or two wears, and they're in the washing machine. I'm in the minority here. I've been doing it wrong. I might have to dabble in the
science.
Well, you also should probably evolve to the fact that you don't let them hang below your butt cheeks anymore. You should probably pick them up and fasten them around your waist.
I don't understand what that means.
Scientifically, it's bad for your jeans. Like, science has proven.
I guess
that
so.
Is bad for the fabric of your jeans.
It's bad for denim, huh?
Yeah.
Not a good day for denim when they go in the washing machine in the dryer.
Well, not when you're washing them every day like you.
Unless they're those old school tough skin type ones where you could run through a steel fence and get all the jagged edges and still they'd be completely intact.
Do either of you guys watch Yellowstone?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard about it, but I don't.
The work wear that they wear, and you're like, oh, they're just wearing, like, jeans and, like, you know, like a nice, like, yeah. you know, work shirt, and it's like, oh, and you look up, like, how much some of that stuff is. Like, oh, those are $800, like, specialty jeans yeah. meant for being on a ranch.
And when you get into the boots and all the other things, yeah, the prices go way up.
I caught up with it last night, so I'm all caught up with Yellowstone. I won't give away any spoilers here. But one of the things that blew me away was whenever Rip, he had the gloves on, and he just grabs the barbed wire fence like it's no big deal. Like, what are those gloves made of?
Yeah, yeah. Those are like $400 yeah, gloves, yeah. probably. Yeah,
yeah, double enforced, padded, all that other stuff. Yeah.
I was yeah. blown away.
Ranchers are a whole, like, oh. you hear about cowboys, but like ranchers and like the equipment they have and stuff, whole different tax
from the standpoint
baby.
Of there's weight room strong and then there's guys like that strong
country
like
strong.
They never yeah. touch a weight in their life, and the things that they can lift and how quickly they could whoop your ass is like ridiculous.
Oh, he picked up a cow. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, yeah, sure,
that's normal for a cowboy.
Yeah, sure.
Sage Rosenfels was on the bench earlier today, and look, the Texans are a debacle, worst offense in the NFL pretty much on any metric. DVOA, their DVOA pass is the worst. Their rushing DVOA is the worst. If you want to look at it from points per game, it's the fewest points per game since 2012, so like yeah. the last decade. The offense is bad. Long story short, Sage Rosenfels came on the bench earlier and said it's the perhaps the worst offense he's ever seen in his life. Worst offense you've seen in your life?
It's up there, man. It's way up there. It's really bad. It's really bad. Here's what the annoying part about it is when Bill O'Brien's offense is sputtered or were bad or had stretches where they were unimpressive, you could point to the fact that really Bill O'Brien was the only one with significant NFL experience around that offense. Like, he's the only one that had a long stint in the NFL because he hired a bunch of his friends. He brought guys from college that didn't have NFL experience. But now you look at the offense. David Culley's been in the NFL for like 27 years. Tim Kelly's been in the NFL for a bunch of years now. Pep Hamilton's been in the NFL for a bunch of years. Campen. Like, the wide receivers coach, the running backs coach, like, all these guys have been in the NFL for a while, so, like, there's clearly a lack of brain talent on the offensive side, because it's not like they're trying a whole bunch of new stuff. Like, it's the same crap you see every week, the same situations you see every week. Like, that's the annoying part, is, like, I thought this coaching staff, from an offensive standpoint, had a lot more brain power than these previous coaching staffs, and it doesn't look like they do.
Now, worse in terms of personnel, we were debating personnel. Worse in terms of personnel, A lot of people just looking at record. I think personnel-wise, the Lions might be more talented than the Texans.
But this would be a fascinating, like, okay, let's draft the offensive players on the Lions and the Texans. And, like, I mean, like, Laremy Tunsil's not available. Like, he's not playing right now.
But it's on,
like,
paper, you're right. If Tunsil's a factor, that's a factor in the draft.
Like, Tunsil and Cooks would be probably one of the first few picks. Like, that's on the advantage Texans. But, like, DeAndre Swift is way better than any running back the Texans have. Jamal Williams is way better than any running back the Texans have.
Jared Goff?
Goff is better than both the quarterbacks. Hockenson's better than all the tight ends put together. Like, if they formed, like, a Megatron or, like, a Voltron of tight ends, they still wouldn't be as good
as
Hockenson.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah. It's just, like, if you combine them all into one tight end, they still wouldn't be nearly as
good
as
Their record's worse. Their talent's better.
But their coach is way better, too.
That, too.
And I understand that Campbell does some unusual things, like some unconventional things going forward on the wrong side of the field and things like that. But, I mean, they play hard, and it's close games regularly.
Yeah. I think the question is, like, should they be historically as bad as they are? And the thing is, like, from a personnel standpoint, they're really bad. And then from, like, an offensive mindset, like you're talking about, they're really bad. So there's nobody helping out each other. Like, good coaching can coach up bad players. Good players can, like, outproduce bad coaching. But when they're both bad, this is what you see.
Yeah, that's where they are.
What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
We got a lot of fun stuff coming on. Trey Wingo at 5:30. Oh. We'll talk a bunch of NFL with him. And isn't it funny that the moment Nick Caserio leaves New England, the Patriots have this fantastic offseason?
You're putting some stock in that, huh? Mm-hmm. What do you think of Nick Caserio's draft as a Houston Texan, as closely as you follow them? If you were to grade his last draft,
I think either with a letter grade or acceptable, satisfactory, very good, or poor.
It might even be incomplete, right?
I think I would give him like a C.
Okay,
because I think he totally blew the Davis Mills thing. There's regularly second and third round. I understand Davis Mills is a third rounder, but there's regularly third round wide receivers that turn out to be really good players, and he ended up getting one in Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. But you could have had multiple third round players helping on the offensive side that wasn't the quarterback spot.
I'm okay rolling the dice on a quarterback, not when you have as many holes as the Houston Texans have. Like, if you're rolling the dice because you're a good, like what Tampa Bay did, they took Trask in the second. Like, that makes some sense, but not where the Texans are.
I also believe
they also had Tom Brady.
I also believe that Caserio had to pick his probably third or fourth quarterback. From like his preference. Yeah.
There was reports of Mond who went right before him. All right, Cody, thanks so much. We'll be listening. Great stuff as always. Going to do it for us. Thanks to Joel for doing all the hard work. Beautiful Andrew looking beautiful today. He's dressed up with the polo, the slacks, looking solid. Yeah, he's looking beautiful. It's fine. I'm willing to admit it. No, I didn't. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Houston, the Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.